This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's August the 10th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you today from MF Global's offices just south of the Chicago Board of Trade. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Rich Feltus, director of research for MF Global, will be with us along the way to offer his perspective on this morning's USDA crop production and WASDE numbers. Speaking of those numbers, the USDA's release this morning looked like this, 1.137 for the ending stocks this morning. For the corn, soybeans at 575 million, that's for this year. For next year at 1.516 billion for the carryover, a 2.2 million carryover for the soybeans and wheat at 404 million. And more importantly, the numbers from the crop production like this, corn at 13.054 billion bushels this year, 152.8 the yield nationally, soybeans at 2.625 billion and the wheat at 2.114, the soybean number for yield nationally at 41.5 bushels to the acre. Taking a look at numbers now as they settled at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange on this Friday afternoon. September wheat today at 6.67 on their settlement price, down 6.5 cents. December down 6.5 at 6.84.5 of the March at 6.78. They're down 5.5 of the day. September corn futures $3.33, three quarters higher. December futures at $3.50.5, up 1.75. And the March contract at $3.65.75, up 1.25 for the day. December corn futures next year at $3.99 on the settlement price, up 2.75. August soybeans at $8.50, down 8. September futures at $8.56, down 6. And November futures at $8.71.75, down 6 for the day. Next year's NOVs at $8.99.5, or a penny and a half higher for the afternoon. August bean meal futures at $2.32.50 on their settlement price, 20 cents higher. The August futures at $36.28 in the bean oil were down 60 for the day. August feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange, 114.97.5, 2.5 cents higher. August live cattle at $90.22.5, down 57.5. And the October futures at $94.50 were 30 lower. August lean hog futures at $73.42.5, they're down 50 for the day. And the bellies traded at $76 even, up 70 cents on the afternoon. On the phone with us this afternoon, as he always is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Things here in Chicago were, I suppose, a little subdued after the report this morning, simply because we haven't seen USDA give numbers that were pretty close to what the trade was expecting in a very long time. It's kind of interesting to have no surprises from Washington this morning.
Yeah, and, you know, the trade probably understands very well that those numbers are likely to change one way or the other quite a bit on either extreme, you know, next month, depending on what the weather is coming into the next couple weeks for beans and how the report structure changes as far as the numerators starting to pull ears and doing number of round counts and things like that, whereas this time around in August they just went ahead and went with crop conditions and satellite data and then, you know, looking at the population. The population, looking at some of the lockup information, that population number certainly was the big key to why we went up on the higher end of the scale, because the population was noted to be very high in those key producing states of Illinois and Iowa.
You know, I heard you talking this morning just a bit to Dave about the carry and the difference between the DEIS and the May contract and your expectations. Can you go through a bit of that again for me, please?
Yeah, you know, this is the time of year, because we're getting into the areas of Texas and the Delta states where the crop's going to start coming off, the early crop against the September futures. And when you have a structure in the market where the September corn is trading 330 roughly, and the DEIS corn is trading 350 roughly, you've got 20 cents difference there, and the September corn is going to be looked at as the early harvested corn. If there's not yield problems in the Delta and the export demand doesn't get more and more and more robust, in other words, the exports and the demand side and the supply side don't work in conjunction with each other so that the September narrows that gap between the SEP and the DEIS and narrows that 20 cent difference, this is the time of the year where the trade, especially with the report coming out, at a 13 billion bushel production, that magical number, it seems like, to turn you from a friendly person to a negative person, that you'll have plenty of supply or not plenty of supply. Because we got that today, those spreads mean a lot because they do interact with the basis levels quite a bit during this time of the year. The hedgers, the commercials, will start pre-hedging bushels, anticipating lower prices and also anticipating some farmer selling. But that can fluctuate and change based upon, obviously, the yields that's coming out of the combine cab on the yield monitors and the price of whether farmers actually let go of a lot into the commercial hands or come back and just put it all on the farm. So that's probably why we're watching that Dease-May corn spread, because we feel like without the spreads being firm, because we're getting ready to bring new crop supplies on board, and this, you know, the Texas crop is going to be very early this year, it sounds like. If they don't get any more rain, they're going to really pick up the pace in the next 10 days. Then if those spreads don't come back together and the basis doesn't tighten, we're probably going to have to play it like 1993, where we wait for another USDA report or wait for the heart of the Corn Belt to get in the combine cab and find out maybe that 152.8 isn't there.
Mike, I'm going to bring Rich into the conversation. Rich Veltas.
Hello, Rich.
Good afternoon.
Rich joining us here, and thank you very much, by the way, for hosting us in the Mann Financial MF Global offices just to the south of the Chicago Board of Trade. Rich is University of Illinois Ag Econ grad. We want to make sure that everybody understands that. A Funk Award winner from last year. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And let's talk a little bit about the numbers as you saw them this morning, and then maybe put them into some global perspective as to how much is available globally out of the WASDE and what you see coming down the pike in the next few months.
Well, I think Mike's opening comments need to be reemphasized. This report today is simply a snapshot of a moving target, one that can change dramatically depending upon the weather the next 2 months, and there's ample history to support that. In terms of the global numbers today, I think it's significant that they did ratchet down global grain production another 9.5 million tons. We are now down some 200 million tons in terms of grain stocks versus the highs in 1999. So the backdrop is one of needing to come back again in 08 and again have good yields across the board, not only in the U.S. but overseas. And it's a backdrop for me that I think is one of the cornerstones of this market, the tight global grain stocks being one of them. Another one being the fact, irrespective of these subprime hiccups that we're having now and the aftershocks they're causing in our financial markets, I still believe that the CRB is trading firm. It's solid. The energy outlook, if one reviews the EIA forecasts out here over the next year, they're still very bullish on crude oil. I'm simply suggesting here that commodities as an asset class, of which the grains are a very important part, I still think remain attractive to large institutional investors, hedge funds, trend-following funds, and all of that, in addition to the tight global grain stocks, are going to support our price levels at higher levels than we would have deemed possible just five and 6 years ago.
I believe that USDA's number showed 280 to 340, and you can correct me, Mike, if that's wrong.
That's right.
The average cash price for the season. Do you think it might be higher than that over time? Did things change this morning at all with that magical 13 billion bushel number, or is there just enough demand in the marketplace from ethanol and from the export side that we'll chew through this crop?
Yeah, I think domestically, nothing has changed to make those numbers fluctuate, but I think Rich's point about the global numbers have to be really looked at hard this weekend by the number crunchers, because now you've got a situation where both global wheat and global corn stocks, coarse grain stocks, have been put down to a level where you can't tolerate any more supply problems. And we've got wheat problems in terms of future supply problems, and Argentina starting, Brazil is starting as well. We're not so sure about what's going on in Australia. That's the wheat side, and then you look at the global corn and bean side, and you're not so sure that the Chinese have got a really decent handle on their crop size. I've seen a lot of information the last couple of weeks, sure Rich has too, that you know the Chinese are starting to let a little bit more information go out that A, their food price inflation's too high, and B, maybe that drought's starting to hit their major two provinces a little bit harder in yields than what they had earlier thought. So certainly that U.S. average price after harvest or as we get into the combines, it may be an issue, Todd, where we use that wheat as a model this year, how wheat rallied so sharply as we harvested. If we find lower yields in Chinese cornfields and lower yields in U.S. cornfields as we harvest, why wouldn't we duplicate kind of way that the way the wheat rallied during its harvest as well because of those global numbers are so tight?
Would we duplicate also the widening basis?
No, that's where the cash would really need to lead. When I was in Chicago a couple weeks ago, I talked to a couple fund guys that really had earned a lot of respect over the last 6 months in their commentary and the how they talk and the humility, for lack of a better term, and they have really started to appreciate the contango or the carrying charge market as one they don't really want to buy into. They really want the inverse market and the front end leading. You know, that used to be the fund investors would try and buy the back end, thinking that was the one to go after, even though it had the premium. A lot of those fund managers now are looking at it the same way the traditional fundamentalist has, too, that we really want the front end leading, and if that's the case, then the cash basis would be the number one out of the gate.
Well, I have a question on that, because we have so much corn that has to move through a transportation system that I'm not sure is going to be capable of handling it. Do you think that the basis really can manage to lead as we go through a harvest season with a 13 billion bushel crop?
I may be way off here, and some in Chicago would certainly say that, because I've had three conversations today that half of them said, you're way off here, Mike. But the point that we probably are trying to get across here is that there's big enough areas in Illinois, in Indiana, in Ohio, along those major river sections, that you're not going to have as big a problem as maybe we would have had 30 days ago if the rains would have fallen widespread, and that the trade in Chicago, the big number crunchers that don't publicize a lot of information, were probably closer to 154, 155, 156 on their yield numbers. They were up there at 13 and a quarter, 13.3 billion bushel crop, and I suspect some of that got funneled into both the basis and a little bit into the future. So I want to believe at this point, Todd, that we've gotten through the worst basis scenario, again, going back to that 1993 scenario where maybe the harvested acres aren't as big because we've lost some due to flooding and drought, due to cutting of silage. Maybe the yield's a little bit lower because of this last 30-day weather pattern.
Rich, would you agree with the assessment that the working numbers in Chicago were in that 13 and a quarter or 155 bushel the acre?
I would say the informers and some of the more seasoned analysts that are out looking at crops would have leaned, be like Informa, being leaning towards the higher end of the yield scale. The Pro Farmer Tour, I think, kicks off next week or the week after. We'll be getting some direct intelligence on their impressions of the crop vis-a-vis prior years. With reference to the basis, I couldn't agree more. Up in parts of western Iowa, northwest Iowa, western Minnesota, northwest Iowa, where the crop definitely has been pinched back, where the it's a virtual epicenter, as you know today, of the ethanol industry. Because of the skyrocketing ocean freight rates, the business off the west coast for corn is increasing. So not only is there an ethanol draw there, but there's a larger West Coast draw. So as he mentioned, Mike mentioned, in central southern Illinois, your basis pressure is not going to be as great because of crops being nipped. Up in northwest Iowa and western Minnesota, because of crop shortfalls, continued ethanol build-out, and strong West Coast corn demand, I think the basis there is not going to be under as much pressure as you would normally think the case. So in any event, yes, I think the corn crop, the commercials, I would say, always are more reluctant to bring crop and yield size down until they've got proof of doing so. And in terms of the whole, and I'll close with this comment, the whole market psyche on this year's corn yield, I think the imprint of what happened last year, that surprising August to final decline in the corn yield, the resulting near doubling of the corn price that occurred very soon thereafter, after it was confirmed to the trade, is going to leave the marketplace in general a lot more cautious about deflating risk premium out of this corn market on early season high yield forecast because of what happened last year. Last year, USDA used record ear weight assumptions in both the August and September calculations that NASS did on the corn production. That was wrong. Certainly, Mike is correct. These plant populations, I'm sure, are what has driven this corn yield as high as it is today. But until the combines roll, until we see, actually look at these harvest yields relative to expectations, this is all one big guessing game until we get out another 60 days.
Well, on that note, and I'll ask both of you, and Mike, maybe you could start out with this. Are the harvest lows in prior to the harvest season really starting in the Midwest, do you think, for corn?
I can't say that because of the outside markets, Todd. I think there's enough concrete information that this bond trading that these hedge funds have done, these quantitative funds have done, have spilled over into the crude oil and the gold markets enough that I am sincerely worried about higher interest rates tapping and nudging down our liquidity. I'm sincerely worried about lower gold and crude oil prices pulling some grain and livestock and soft fund money out of the market. So the futures could still lead the market lower as a whole, the whole cash market as a whole here the next 30 days. But I think everything else we've said, I'll stand by.
Myself, I'm more optimistic. I think the commodity story driven by strong growth in the developing world is still very strong. And that until we see hedge funds actually being restricted by the large banks in terms of the money loaned to hedge funds to invest in commodities and or commodity-specific sector money coming out of hedge funds, I think the commodity story is still fairly strong. I don't think there's enough evidence yet on the table to undermine, if you look at a weekly or monthly CRB chart, the strong uptrend that exists in that market, number one. And number two, be mindful that the Energy Information Agency and its counterpart here in the U.S., the Department of Energy, are both very strong about their bullish outlook for crude, which is, you know, half the CRB, and a very important component in maintaining this long-term optimism about commodities as an asset class.
Would you be in... you're talking about commodities in general, so are we talking about corn, soybeans, and wheat, and can wheat continue to derive as high a price as it has in recent weeks?
Well, we haven't talked much about wheat. I'll just say briefly here, I thought the most shocking number of today's global release of data was the EU wheat export forecast. Our contacts in the commercial trade would suggest that USDA, which lowered it just a 500,000 tons today to 11.5 million tons, that they could still be 3 to 4 million tons too high, and that is all potential demand that could be shifting into the U.S. and taking our carryover in wheat here at or below 350 million bushels. And if that is the case, we certainly have not as yet seen the highs in wheat.
Any final word from you before I let you go for the day, Mike?
I think that's a great point. I think the Ukraine is the same thing. Our contacts over at Strategies Grains that we've talked to this whole year, I haven't talked to them because it was a weekend already for them, but I suspect next week they're going to be very surprised that the production number wasn't lowered a lot more and the export numbers weren't lowered a lot more for the EU-27 and the Ukraine as well.
Mike, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, and thanks, guys. It was a nice interview.
Yeah, Mike Zuzulo is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon. Today, we're coming to you from the MF Global Research offices just to the south of the Chicago Board of Trade. Rich Feltus, U of I Ag Econ alum, so graciously offering the conference room here for us to derive this edition of the Closing Market Report. We thank you very much for that. I want to take up the soybean market just a bit with you because we haven't really talked about the beans at this point. The numbers for the beans this morning from USDA didn't change from the last report. Did that surprise you at all?
Not really. Not with the condition ratings and with our field reports from crop contacts that the beans have been holding up reasonably well with all of the vagaries of weather. Today's soybean yield, like the corn yield, was the highest ever USDA has given us on an August crop report. And I think USDA boldly pushed above 41.5 bushels, even though it's quite a bit above the prior August high bean yield, which was in the year 2000 when they gave us 40.7. They did that today largely because there has been a fairly marked tendency in each of the last 3 years for USDA to underestimate the bean yield on this August crop report, and not by just a little, by quite a lot, by 2 to over 4 bushels per acre. So I think they, you know, for whatever reasons here in these last 3 years, they have been underestimating the bean crop, and they, I think, tried today to not have such a large gap between August and final.
I'd like to start to talk a little bit more about the cash basis once again. Dave Dickey was out in Taylorville, Illinois last week, last night, talking to farmers and to elevator operators. They're awfully concerned on the grain side, the elevator side, that the corn crop and the bean crop combined are putting so many bushels into the system that they're really not going to be able to handle it, that elevators are not going to be willing to create more ground piles than they already have space for at this point, and that there are going to be, in Illinois at least, a number of bushels in the millions, in the hundreds of millions, that have to go on the ground somewhere or in storage on the farm. Are you concerned at all that this fall that producers will be harvesting so quickly that the system simply will not be able to handle a 13 billion bushel crop?
I'm not overly concerned. We've seen this large crop coming. We knew about the 12 million acres earlier in the year. The American grain storage build-out system has been working overtime to partially meet the challenge. I would say also in addition to that, that the in terms of the basis, recently here in soybeans, it has been firming up. It's been firming up in Brazil. It's been firming up here in this country from these extraordinary low levels because farmer selling has been has dried up in soybeans. We're talking about soybeans now. There's no question it's going to be a challenge this fall because we're going to be handling a record supply. It will exceed the record supply we had to put away a couple of years ago. But again, I think these larger issues of what the farmer experienced last year, the last couple of years, in terms of rapid post-harvest price appreciation, will have the producer trying to hold back as much as he can into the fall harvest. And then beyond that, we don't know what the final crop size is. We don't know what the final demands are going to be on our storage system this fall. But I would say the overall optimism in grains and the strong early export sales, new crop across the board, corn, soybeans, wheat, the fact that the ethanol guy is going to be buying corn, the opportunity to buy corn this fall at the cheapest level in months, I think will all tend to temper basis pressure.
Rich Feltus is with MF Global, joining us from the MF Global offices in Chicago this afternoon, talking a bit about the soybean basis and corn market. And along with us by phone today, as he always is Bruce Bostard, the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company in Ludlow, Illinois. Hi, Bruce.
Hello.
Did you catch a bunch of the conversation about storage and putting things on the ground and the elevators unwilling to maybe put more on the ground than they did last year and not able to build out more?
Yes, I did. Some excellent comments. You know, we have seen ground piles expand over the last few years. I think everybody has been building new bins here in East Central Illinois. We've been expanding ground piles. There comes to a point, though, where you have to say enough is enough on how much you're putting out on the ground. Although it's easy for me to say that right now, it might be a lot harder the second week in October for me to say that.
And that's because you'll be getting pressure from farmers.
Getting pressure to keep dumping the trucks and keep the doors open, exactly.
How concerned are you that a crop of the size that we have in Illinois will put, and East Central Illinois will put that kind of pressure on you?
It's really hard to tell right now. We're going in with a lot more space available than we had last year, both through new construction, through less inventory that we're carrying in. We have rail on the books if they show up in a timely manner. But the question is just how good is good? You know, we have a good corn crop out here, but it is Ford County, you know, 180 bushel last year? Is it 190 this year or 220? And in that range, there is a huge variation on how well we'd be able to handle it.
We talked a bit earlier about the way the basis has changed because of the ethanol market in the West, in Iowa, in Minnesota, and the strong export demand that's actually coming off of the Pacific Coast. Will basis in your area, you think, widen up more than usual because of that and the large crop?
I think we have widened up more than usual in anticipation of it. The question now is going to be how good of a job we've done or in planning for it and how well we can put this crop away. And that's what the basis market right now is daring us to put the crop away. You know, the market's saying put it away and carry in it, and just how well can you do it, how efficiently or how effectively can you put, and how much will go overflow and have to ship? And that's the big question that it's going to take another month or so to figure out.
And the final question of the day, what are your bids?
We are at 315 at Paxton on corn nearby and 802 on soybeans.
Bruce, thanks much.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Rich Feltus, we appreciate you being with us today. Any final word before I let you go this afternoon?
Friday crop reports are taxing at the end of a long week. Every week in the grain analyst business in the summer is taxing, so I'm looking forward to a weekend of rest and relaxation.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon in the future. Again, thank you much for hosting us. Rich Feltus of MF Global Research, where he's the director of research. In 2 minutes, we'll talk with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. I'm Todd Gleason. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jeff Bossert. Three people were killed in an accident at an air shaft under construction at a southern Indiana coal mine today. Police in Princeton, Indiana, say the people died in a basket used to transport personnel up and down the 600-foot air shaft, but he could not say whether they fell. Authorities don't believe anyone else was trapped or injured in the accident at Gibson County Coal. The mine is owned by Tulsa, Oklahoma-based Alliance Resource Partners. The mine is in near Princeton, about 30 miles north of Evansville. Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich says both chambers still have a lot to do in the legislature. In a morning appearance at the state fair, he didn't say he would veto the similar budget packages passed by the House and Senate, but called it a proposal full of pork politics and false promises. After cutting the ribbon opening the fair, Blagojevich returned to the Capitol saying he had work to do. Illinois is now in its 10th day without a budget. Meanwhile, there's a lot of uncertainty among lawmakers. The House was supposed to back this morning on the budget measure passed by the Senate, but the Senate hasn't sent it over. And Senate President Emil Jones says that's because both chambers' staffs are working to correct any last-minute mistakes. The Senate is in recess, but many members appear to have left town for the weekend. The Senate plans to return to work Monday. Jones also says a program for school and road construction projects is dead after it didn't receive enough votes to pass late last night. Two Champaign County board members are proposing that the county go to one administrator to operate the county government. Republican Greg Knott and Democrat Brendan McGinty call their plan a work in progress, but it was endorsed out of the county board's policy committee this week. Knott says Champaign County is the only county they've seen with such an organizational structure. McGinty says this plan would allow Champaign County to operate more efficiently. And teachers in the rural Champaign County village of Fisher will resume contract talks with the school board after the academic year starts. But Teachers Union President Kathy Brake says there's been no talk of a strike vote and remains optimistic that the two sides will reach an agreement. A federal mediator will be involved in talks on August 22nd. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for a representative nearest you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. This is AM 580 coming to you from the MF Global Research offices just to the south of the Chicago Board of Trade today. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather, as he does each and every Friday afternoon, Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. County. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather for the weekend, please.
Well, we did get a break today from the humidity a little bit. Would be totally oppressive like it was the last few days. Dew points are generally down in the upper 60s to low 70s right now, and we'll probably start seeing them climb up again beginning on Sunday as winds swing around more to a southerly direction. So bottom line is we're going to get back into the weather pattern that we had earlier this week with hot weather and certainly more oppressive and humid weather. But it looks like we might have a decent shot at some rain around the middle to end of the week as a frontal system comes through. So that would be the one big difference, I think.
And does that go for the whole of the Midwest?
It looks like there will be a pretty good band of rain coming through Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana in the late Wednesday, Thursday time frame. The feature has been appearing rather consistently on the last several model runs. Now, whether it's just scattered showers or there's actually some organized activity to it, we'll have to wait another day or two to see how things are shaking out. But at least the possibility there. It could also be some showers or thunderstorms in western Illinois, on the northwest-southeast axis from Iowa through into southern Illinois along this week, frontal boundary as it comes back north late in the weekend, early next week. So there's a couple opportunities, but most of the days are going to be dry.
Steve, we appreciate you being with us today. One other quick note, what do your numbers say for the size of the crop for corn?
Well, we saw some big drops this week in corn. It's down a bushel an acre over the entire region, about 100 to about 151 bushels an acre. Some of the largest drops we saw were south here where it's been hot and dry. Kentucky was down 7 bushels an acre, Indiana down 4, and Illinois, Missouri, and Ohio down 3. So we're starting to see some weather effects pretty significantly right now.
Thanks much.
Okay, Todd.
Steve Ilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right there in Champaign County. I'm Todd Gleason. Our thanks to Rich Feltus and Company and MF Global Research for hosting us from Chicago.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Thank you.